It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. For the last month, 50 young professionals from sub-Saharan Africa have been in Iowa developing business skills they'll be able to take back home. They're part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders, the flagship program of President Obama's Young African Leaders Initiative. The program started in 2014, and competition to be part of it is strong. 40,000 people applied, 1,000 were selected, and 50 of those individuals came to Iowa in partnership with the University of Iowa and Drake University. 25 fellows at the University of Iowa, 25 at Drake. And this hour, we'll meet four of the fellows who are at the University of Iowa. But first, with me, Dimi Dureska, director of the University of Iowa Institute for International Business. Hello, Dimi.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And this is the first year that the University of Iowa has been involved in this program. Why did you want to get involved?
Well, Charity, thank you for having us on the program today. The University of Iowa has its Institute for International Business, of which I'm the director. And the College of Business, through the missions of the entire University of Iowa, wants to provide a platform to Iowa City community and to the students where they can cultivate a global mindset. And when this opportunity came to me through our international program at the University of Iowa, the Dean for International Program, Downing Thomas, when he told me about this opportunity, I jumped on it. I said, not only this will bring us the young entrepreneurs, young leaders from sub-Saharan African countries, but they will also provide us the platform that our students need to start cultivating this global mindset right here, to start mingling with people from different cultures, cultures they are not familiar with. And these fellows, while they are here, they get to mingle with our leaders, our business leaders, our communities, et cetera, et cetera. When they go back, they will be the best ambassadors that we could have for our companies, for our communities, for our university.
So you see this not just as an opportunity for the fellows, but also as an opportunity for Iowa students and Iowa businesses?
That is correct. It is a great opportunity for the fellows to learn our ways of doing business, our ways of conducting business activities, but also it is an opportunity for Iowa students, for Iowa companies, definitely.
The fellows are spending about 6 weeks in the United States this summer. They've been here in Iowa for about a month. What have they been doing?
They've been busy. They have been busy. Not only we keep them in classroom, but they've been traveling throughout the states of Iowa. And the fellowship started with our venture school program the first 2 weeks. Each of the fellow has a project that they've been working on, either to start a new company or to expand the one they already have. And each of them through our venture school. The venture school is normally a 6 weeks program that we did with them in 6 days or 2 weeks, over two weeks, but 6 days. They vetted their project through the business model canvas in doing venture school. They worked with mentors. They worked with our venture school faculties to make sure that their business, their ideas were proper and good business ideas, and they pivoted their ideas several times. And at the end of the venture school, we started having a theme every week. There was a theme when we had business ethics. There was a theme, it was innovation. And there was a theme where we had international entrepreneurship. And then this week theme, we are talking about leadership and et cetera. So they visited companies in Muscatine, Iowa, and in the Quad Cities. In fact, they got a chance to visit all the four cities of the Quad Cities, Davenport, Bettendorf, Fork Island, and Moline. They've been to Cedar Rapids. And we were in Des Moines last Friday, and they're going to go to West Branch. They're going to go back to Cedar Rapids again this week. So they've been pretty busy, and even to schedule to come on the show, it was pretty tight. So, right. But we managed to be with you today, Charity.
And we are very grateful. So you mentioned the venture school. So there is a little element of competition here as well, because if every fellow has a project, one of those fellows at the end of the program will have their project selected for a $25,000 investment.
That is correct. And let me tell you, the fellowship program has four tracks, business entrepreneurship, civic leadership, public management, and I can't remember the other one. But the one in business and entrepreneurship, about 400, and as you mentioned at the introduction, there are about 1,000 fellows. Right. 400 of them are part of the business and entrepreneurship. The ones that are with us at the University of Iowa, they are in the business and entrepreneurship track. And they submitted an application on July 1 to compete with 300 other business and entrepreneurship track fellows in order to win each $25,000 grant, and they will select 50 winners out of 300 applicants.
Wow.
So it's very competitive. The grant will come from USADF, United States Development Agency for Africa. So 50 will be selected for $25,000.
Wow. So when does that happen?
Pretty soon. Pretty soon. I mean, they'll tell you what their project's about. Pretty soon, they will hear whether they get selected, because the ones that got selected will leave early. I think mid next week, they'll have to go to Washington, D.C. To start getting trained for the grant. But they'll know that. I mean, they probably, each time they see a 202 area code calling, they're probably looking at their phone to see.
All right. So we'll talk about the nerves and the tension involved in that in a little while. And now you mentioned that it's almost time for everyone to leave. They go to Washington, D.C., and how long are they there before they go home?
So they leave July 31st to go to Washington, D.C. for a presidential summit with President Obama. The summit starts on August 1st, Monday, August 1st, and it finishes on the 3rd. So it's a three-day summit. And there, they will meet with the other fellows from across the United States. So there'll be 1,000 of them there. And then President Obama will really kind of like have the summit with them to talk to them about the importance of servant leadership. And why we think even in the business sector, you can still be a servant leaders. And today, because this week here at our institute, the theme is leadership. So we've been talking a lot about servant leadership. And Ambassador Juan McMillan, he was the presenter today, one of the presenters, and he talked to me about that. And I think President Obama will emphasize on that, will emphasize in how they can be an agent of change in their respective countries in Africa.
So. Now, in just a moment, we are going to meet some of the fellows. We have four of the fellows here with us today, so we'll meet each one of them, and they'll get to tell us about their background and the projects that they're working on. But, Dimi, I want to ask you, you've spent a lot of time with these individuals over the last month. What do you feel has been the most powerful experience? What have you been involved with that you thought, This is what they came for, and this is also something that benefits Iowa?
Their passion for Africa. They inspired me about the continent. Each of them, they have their stories. Also, the way they see change can happen on the continent. The way they do not want to sit on the sideline. They want to get their hands dirty. They want to roll up their sleeves and start getting to work and get things done. That's really, every day when I talk to them, this is what I see. And if us here at the University of Iowa or in the state of Iowa, we can play a role in that. Minute that could be, that will be my satisfaction. And I think we begin to do that. and they're very grateful to the role that we've been playing here in the passion that they have in the change that they want to be the catalyst of in Africa. They see what we are doing, and it is an exchange. We are learning a lot from them. As much as they are learning from us, we are learning a lot from them.
In the United States, there is a tremendous lack of knowledge about African countries. It's a very big continent with a lot of countries.
That is correct.
And a lot of people. Have you noticed among students from the University of Iowa and other Iowans some surprise about what they're learning about Africa and all of these? I mean, the fellows at the University of Iowa represent 18 different countries.
That is correct. I mean, and I can tell you 18 different countries, 18 different cultures. We have three fellows from Nigeria, but their views totally different on things. We have two from Kenya. Again, views different, totally different on things. So it's amazing to see. It's the same continent, but a lot of people do not understand that you got 54 countries in Africa, and when you take sub-Saharan Africa, when you take that out, even if they have a lot of similarities, but the differences are huge. Like a big country like Nigeria, differences within Nigeria only, the differences are huge.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I've been talking with Dimi Dureska. He is director of the University of Iowa Institute for International Business. And the University of Iowa is one of the sites this summer for the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders. There are 25 fellows who have been spending the last month at the University of Iowa and traveling around the state. 25 other fellows at Drake University traveling around the state of Iowa. And in just a moment, we are going to meet some of the fellows who have been at the University of Iowa this summer. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are meeting some of the Mandela Washington Fellows. This is part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders. It's the flagship program of President Obama's Young African Leadership Initiative through the U.S. State Department. The program started in 2014. 1,000 fellows were selected for this summer. 50 of those individuals came to Iowa, 25 at the University of Iowa, 25 at Drake University. With me, Dimi Dureska, director of the UI Institute for International Business. He's been spending the summer with the Mandela Fellows. And now I want to introduce some of the fellows. Dave Oketch is here. He is from Kenya, and he is founder and managing director of an animal feed manufacturing company. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Charity. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much. It's a great opportunity.
Now, Dave, I want to ask you, when you heard you were coming to Iowa, had you ever heard of Iowa before? Did you know where it was?
Thank you so much, Charity. Actually, I've never heard of Iowa, and that was the first time I got an opportunity to try and find out and locate the exact position of Iowa in the map of the United States. So this is a very great opportunity.
So coming to the United States, which is a very large country, but here you are coming to Iowa, which is a small state, just over 3 million people in the state of Iowa. So tell me a little bit about where you live in Kenya, which is a much larger country of 45 million people.
I live in Western Kenya, a small city called Kisumu. It's the third largest city in Kenya, and it's fairly populated, but the lifestyle is almost resembling that of Iowa City.
All right, and a lot of rural countryside around the city?
Yeah, it's a metropolitan city, but we have a lot of people who have come into the city either to look for a job or to start businesses. Where I live exactly is more on the peri-urban part of the city. An area, to be precise, it's called Kibos. It has a lot of manufacturing companies that produce feeds and process sugar for for the country.
Tell me a little bit about your business.
So, like you've mentioned before, I have an animal feed manufacturing company. We are actually addressing three major issues that are affecting small-scale livestock farmers using our products and services. One of them is the high cost of feeds, high cost of acquiring feeds itself, and the low income that farmers have been facing for a very long period of time. So I started Sarah Miller's Limited Company 3 years back as a means to help farmers come out of these three major issues that they have been facing. And we do this by, one is producing quality and affordable animal feeds to livestock farmers. I have also developed a mobile app that is enabling farmers to buy feeds from their phone or using their phone directly through our company. And this has lowered the cost of feed acquisition by almost 30% to farmers, which has gone down in terms of creating additional income to the farmers and being a very big cost-saving opportunity for them. Another way through which my company is addressing these issues is empowerment. We have introduced what is called human-centered design aspect in our business. And this is identifying one particular section of the community and incorporating them into your value chain, either as one of the value chain actors. In this case, we are working with adolescent girls aged between 10 to 19 years, and we are using indigenous chicken or local chicken to empower the girls. We give them chicken at a credit cost. We train them on how to rear chicken. We teach them basic entrepreneurial skills. The girls, in turn, have an opportunity to start generating income and money and are able to stay and complete school. And that is a very great opportunity for us to grow as a company and to enable young girls in the society where we come from to get an opportunity in life through our products and services as a company.
Why did you choose to focus on adolescent girls?
Well, these are the most disempowered section of the community where I come from. Girls typically don't have an asset that they own in a typical Kenyan society or African setup. Why girls and why chicken? Chicken is the asset that girls typically own. Boys own large animals, cows, sheep, and stuff like that. Girls own chicken, and so we thought there is a great opportunity for girls with their ownership of chicken for us to use that opportunity to empower them, and it is really creating a very big difference for that.
I guess I've read a lot about the role of women and girls in a number of different societies in Africa, but I would love to hear from you. Was there a particular experience or something that you saw that made you think, I want to make a difference to these girls?
Yes, particularly one is when I was once approached by a group of people how I could use my business to create an opportunity or give somebody an opportunity in life to gain experience and to have a second chance in life. It was very difficult to imagine how I could incorporate anybody because my business was a startup and all I wanted to do was to make money and be able to earn money. But then having come from a society where girls are disempowered and chicken rearing was one of the major activities which my company was participating in. I saw opportunity from the way girls used to interact with the in-laws when they come. When a girl goes to visit a home of the in-law, then one of the honorable things was to be given a chicken. But immediately she comes with the chicken back home, it will be slaughtered for dinner to celebrate the visit. So, given that opportunity, the girl will not get any benefit apart from eating the chicken. And an opportunity for a girl to rear chicken and start getting more chicken out of the single chicken she has been given by her grandmother or something like that will be an opportunity for the girl to basically earn some income. And that is the opportunity gap we saw in how can we use the chicken that girls are traditionally associated with to empower them so that, one, they can become self-sufficient and less dependent on their male counterparts and such like that. Yes.
I'm talking to Dave Okech. He's from Kenya. He's the founder and managing director of an animal feed manufacturing company. And I want to bring Romisu Mushumba into the conversation. She is from Zimbabwe. She is a farmer and chairperson of the Zimbabwe Farmers Union Youth Wing, member of the South African Confederation of Agriculture Units. Romisu, thank you so much for being here.
Hello, Charity.
And I gave just a little thumbnail of your background, although it sounds like you are involved in many different things. You have 10 years of experience in agriculture, and you're a horticulture farmer. Tell me about your farm. What do you do?
I started farming in about, first I did a bachelor's degree in agriculture in the United Kingdom. And I worked there a bit. And then in 2010, I returned back to Zimbabwe. And my father owned a farm, but he never really utilized the land. So when I came back, I started looking for opportunities of something to do. And then in 2012, I decided to start a small project where I was growing vegetables. What I first did was I did a market research, and I discovered that during the cooler times of the year, vegetables were very expensive. So I decided to grow some vegetables for that market, and vegetables were also not available. So I grew the vegetables, and then I supplied. And then as I was supplying, I realized that there was actually a greater demand in the market for people who actually wanted vegetables but were not available. In Zimbabwe, it's very different from here in the United States. It's very possible to walk into a shop and not find vegetables during the cooler times of the year. So what I did is that I managed to find a company, a British company, that that was looking for people to grow certain vegetables to export to Europe. And then I diversified, and I started growing mushed two peas and sugar snap peas that I was supplying to the United Kingdom. And during my journey as farming as well, I started looking at this was now the time when I was elected chairperson because of the work I was doing in exporting, but I started to look at, as a chairperson, what sort of example can I set in my community? In Zimbabwe, a lot of farmers have now moved to growing tobacco because of it's very profitable, and they're curing their tobacco using wood. So we've lost a lot of forest, and we it's actually a disaster at the moment. If we continue the way we're going to be the country will become a desert. So I've partnered with a company called Sustainable Afforestation Association, and we started to plant trees. So I turned up 250 acres of the land that we have, because it was underutilized anyway, for forestry. Even though forestry is not very profitable compared to crops, but I thought, you know, we are responsible as the citizens of the country to take care of our environment. And I'm also advocating a lot for drought-resistant varieties for climate change, because climate change is a very, very big hot topic in Southern Africa at the moment. And we need to do something, or else we will go into immense hunger if we don't start addressing climate change. And a lot of people are losing yields because of climate change. So I'm a very big advocate for climate smart agriculture, and how I can promote this, and how I can also promote nutrition in the community, and just help the people in the community so that they can have a better life, so that our children can grow up and even have a better life than we have had.
I was just talking with Dave about his work to give chickens to young girls or adolescent girls in Kenya. You are a businesswoman and involved in international politics and advocacy. How unusual is that for a woman in Zimbabwe to be in your position?
It is very, very unusual. A lot of people, when they first see me, they actually don't believe it's true, because women in Zimbabwe, I would say women, yes, participate in agriculture, but they normally at the back end. They're not normally influencing any policy, advocating, standing up, saying what they feel that agriculture should be shaped in the country. So it's something that I think it was a lot of support from my family, who said to me, you know what, just try and go for it. And I come from a very rural community where women haven't yet been empowered. So it's viewed that men should really be in these sort of positions. but I am the first woman who actually stood up and was elected and to become the national chairperson in all the history of the union, which is 75 years.
Wow, that's so impressive. Listening to you, though, you are a farmer. You're working on international exports. You're working on advocacy to fight climate change, but also advocacy for empowering women and youth. Is it difficult to know where to put your energy? It sounds like you have a lot of passions.
I feel like they all intertwine in a way. Yes, I am exporting, but I would say exporting is my project where I can generate enough income to be able to support the other projects. Because I have a plantation that I've planted, I only start selling anything in about 7 years. So all of them support each other. So I've got my long-term projects, my medium, and my short-term projects. So they all interlink with each other, and they all help me to touch bases with the community so that I'm not just growing just for myself, but I'm also growing also with the community in mind.
In just a very brief description, what is the project that you have presented here with the fellows in hopes of getting an investment?
So what I'm hoping to get the grant for is I want to expand the irrigation structure we currently use, because we currently use a system where it's quite, we waste a lot of water and there's high evaporation, and I can only move the sprinkler lines in a short time, so I can't irrigate a big piece of land. And so I've submitted my grant to be able to expand my irrigation infrastructure like you use here in the United States, so as to become more commercial and to be able to supply a greater piece of the market.
How about you, Dave? Very briefly, what is the plan that you've presented?
So I've presented a project plan to expand my chicken business to enable and continue empowering the adolescent girls to become self-sufficient and able to earn money, continue to stay in school, yes.
I can only imagine how difficult it must be for the committee to decide who gets the grants in this situation. Rumisu, what do you think the most valuable experience you've had here in Iowa this summer has been?
I would say it would be the community service that we did last week. Because for me, in the classes, we've been learning a lot about servant leadership styles, and we have had so many inspirational people, but seeing it in practice is very different and very practical. So I'll definitely say that is something that I carry with me now, just the people I met and their humility towards the way they serve their community is of great value to me.
And how about you, Dave? What's the most powerful experience you've had this summer?
Well, my most powerful experience has been the venture school. It has really helped me shape up the focus I had on my business. I now have a completely different view of how my business is running, how I would like it to run, and what I will expect to be achieving in the next few years. I was so much focused on boundaries of Kenya and just solving a Kenyan problem, but now I have opened up my scope to be thinking beyond the borders of Kenya and Africa as a whole, and the potential that global business provides to small enterprises like mine.
Now, this is supposed to be a cultural exchange, and people in Iowa are supposed to be learning about Africa too. So, Rumisu, what do you want the Iowans that you've interacted with to know and remember about Zimbabwe?
Well, I think what I would want the Iowan people to remember about Zimbabwe is that Zimbabwe is a country full of loving people. Like, a lot of people, when they meet you from Zimbabwe, they just ask you about all the politics,
right?
And they think this is the way people are. But people are very loving there and really are friendly to even anyone who visits. We believe in diversity and integrating whoever.
How about you, Dave? What do you want Iowans to remember and to know about Kenya?
Well, I would love Iowans to know that Kenya is a very friendly nation and who is willing and looking forward to working with Iowans as a state and United States as a whole. And Iowans feel welcome to visit Kenya anytime. You have Dave to represent you in Kenya. please contact me. I'll be available. You have all my contacts with the University of Iowa. And I'm looking forward to receiving Iowans in my hometown, Kisumu, as many as they can.
All right. So do you think that Iowa is as friendly as your home countries?
I think it exceeded my expectation.
Very, very diplomatic. All right, we need to take a short break. Dave Oketch, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Charity.
Dave Oketch from Kenya. He's founder and managing director of an animal feed manufacturing company. Rumisu, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Rumisu is Rumiso Mashuba from Zimbabwe. She is a farmer and chairperson of the Zimbabwe Farmers Union Youth Wing and member of the South African Confederation of Agriculture Unions. We will meet two more of the Mandela Washington Fellows who are spending their summer here in Iowa in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with a number of the Mandela Washington Fellows. They're part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders. It's a program of President Obama's Young African Leaders Initiative. The program started in 2014, but this is the first year we've had fellows in Iowa, both at the University of Iowa and at Drake University. There are 25 fellows at each of those universities. They represent a number of different countries across sub-Saharan Africa, and they are here learning business skills that they hope they can take back home with them. They've been here for about a month. They have a couple more weeks before they head home. And with me still is Dimi Dureska. He is the director of the University of Iowa Institute for International Business, and we'll bring a couple of fellows into the conversation. Luline Agacho is here. She is from Ethiopia and is co-founder of an agribusiness company. Hello, Luline.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, tell me a little bit about the company that you co-founded.
It was an agribusiness company, which was founded 3 years ago by me and my partner in life and my partner in business, my husband. He's an agricultural expert who was in government agricultural institute for 9 years. And I had 6 years of experience of development work. We always had in our minds, what can we do to help reduce the food insecurity in our country? And we thought we could do better if we started our own business. And that's why we both quit our jobs 3 years ago.
Wow.
And we started a company. We directly wanted to go into chicken business, but since we didn't have the financial capacity, we said, first, let's do the service. We can sell our skills, we can earn good capital, and then we can go and invest in food.
Okay, so selling your skills, what do you do?
So in Bislett Agritech, what we do is we do consultancy work, we do pest control and food safety management for companies, for food companies.
Okay.
In the consultancy part, when a foreign investor or a local investor wants to invest in agriculture in Ethiopia, we provide services. We take them through the process of government requirements. If they want to do to go further and invest in agriculture, we do feasibility studies. We facilitate soil test, water test, everything that a person wants to do or a company wants to do in agriculture, and we get paid for that. And we do also pest control services and food safety. We help companies to be qualified to export their edible items to international market. And also we inspect and we provide pest control services.
Now, you mentioned food insecurity in Ethiopia. And I guess for a lot of Americans, that's what we know about Ethiopia in the 1980s. The national media, international media covered terrible, terrible famine in Ethiopia a lot. Now, of course, as you know, a lot of Iowans, a lot of Americans don't know a great deal about Africa, and we don't hear a lot about Ethiopia today. What is the food security situation like in Ethiopia now?
I would say it has improved a lot from 20 or 30 years ago, but we still have issues. Food is very expensive. The difference from back in those days is no one directly dies of hunger these days. But still, lots of families, especially in rural areas and slum areas in urban in the urbans, go without enough food or go without enough nutritious food during the day. And food is one of the expensive commodities in the country. And that's the situation, even though no one directly dies from it, but still people struggle to have enough food on their tables on daily basis.
When you talk about helping other farmers or agricultural companies grow so that they can export out of Ethiopia, is that controversial at all, given that you still don't have quite enough food grown and sold in Ethiopia, to think about farmers in Ethiopia sending their food away?
The consultancy part is for local market. When I say the food safety area is the ones for export,
okay.
The food safety. There are commodities which we grow. Our largest export is coffee. And I think we have like pretty enough coffee to drink at home and to export. And we have oil seeds to export, and also some herbs. When I say internally, the shortage of food we have is like crops, basic crops to eat, animals and so on. So they're like in two different sets.
And of course, the farmers need to make enough money to buy the food that they need to feed their families too.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me just briefly about the idea that you've been presenting here that you're hoping will qualify you for a grant and an investment.
I have, I think, a personal story which comes to that. The whole food idea started when I used to work for World Vision. I used to travel a lot within Africa especially. And one evening I was taking a walk in streets of Dar es Salaam, and I saw chicken being fried and sold on the roadside. And I was taken aback because in Ethiopia, chicken is a delicacy which only a few people afford, and many people afford it only three times. You have chicken for New Year's, Easter, and Christmas. So it was like a surprise for me. Dar es Salaam, Tanzania is a neighboring country. And then I keep seeing that pattern in Kenya, in Uganda, Rwanda, everywhere I go. Chicken is like available on the streets. And I was surprised. Here is Ethiopia, very close to everybody. And why is chicken very expensive? There must be something wrong with the market. That's, I have a personal link with that. I have a passion for it. The only thing that's keeping me to go into it was the financial. So that's what I'm hoping to get now. And I think I have also the tip of the solution.
So to start a company where you grow chickens so people in Ethiopia can eat chicken
exactly
more than three times a year. I want to bring somebody else into the conversation. I've been talking to Luline Agacho from Ethiopia. She is the co-founder of an agribusiness company. Also with me, Peter Jacoby from Malawi. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you for being here. He is managing director of an investment company involved in poultry products, as well as being the founder and executive director of the Center for Free Market Enterprise. Tell me a little bit about your investment company. What do you do?
Let me tell you a bit history of the company. When I graduated from the university in June 2013, I studied in Uganda, an East African country. And when I went back home, I stayed for 3 months without employment. I applied for a lot of jobs. I think I made over 200 applications, but I was never even invited for an interview. And one day in my country, in my city, Zomba, I went to a restaurant, and I was very hungry, really hungry. And when I ordered food, I was told that there are no chickens, so I'm not going to eat a chicken because the restaurant, they ran out of chickens. And they told me that the manager of the restaurant had traveled to Blantyre. Blantyre is just a nearby city, about 1.5 hours drive from my city. So they told me that the manager traveled to Blantyre to buy chickens because they had run out of chickens. And I said, no, there's no way a restaurant in Zomba, the people in Zomba, there's no way we have to travel to Blantyre to bring out chickens. So I said, I will come up with a company. I will be raising chickens, will be raising layers, and will be selling them out to the people in Zomba, the restaurants in Zomba. And I started.
So one dinner gave you an idea for a career.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You are also involved in the Center for Free Market Enterprise. Mm-hmm. What does that involve? What are you trying to accomplish?
When I started my chicken business, within a few months, it became successful. I was able to raise money for myself, and I was also able to pay school fees for my two sisters. I'm the firstborn in our family. And in Africa, our culture is that once the family educates the firstborn, you have to educate your siblings. So my parents gave me responsibility to look after my sisters. And that time, my two sisters had just finished high school, and they were supposed to go to the university. And they failed to make it to a public university, which is very cheap. So I had a successful business, and I was able to pay the school fees for my sisters at a private university. And one of them I was selected to go and study in Kenya, at the Catholic University of Kenya, and she'll be graduating this year. So I said, I am an entrepreneur, and it's working. It's working for me. I'm able to do ABCD. And we have a lot of young people in this country who are still unemployed. They are moving up and down, and they don't get unemployment. Why can't I start an organization which will be training the young people in business and entrepreneurship? I introduced the idea to a couple of my friends. They liked the idea. I met some family members. They liked the idea. I met some academicians. They liked it, and they volunteered to be on the board of trustees. So we started the organization called Center for Free Market Enterprise to advocate for entrepreneurship and train young people in business and entrepreneurship.
What is the idea that you have presented in hopes of winning a grant?
One of the challenges which we have in our country is that most of the young people who are just starting their businesses, they find challenges to find an affordable co-working space where they can launch their enterprise, where they can get mentorship, where they can get inspiration and resources. So I've applied for this grant so that I can start an affordable co-working space whereby you'll be providing the co-working space at a very good price. And at the same time, providing the mentorship to the people who will be members of the co-working space.
Also access to technology,
exactly.
Is that part of that? All right. Mm-hmm. Now, what would you say, Peter, is the most valuable experience you've had here in Iowa?
I had lots of experiences. First of all, the interaction with American people, learning their culture, learning how they do their things, what they like. Like we had a day, one of the days we went to watch a baseball game in Cedar Rapids. That was just wow. The American people are just so friendly. They can even tell you the directions if you are lost. Like one day I was lost in Iowa City, and I was asking for a map, and someone said, no, I will not tell you. I will take you to where you are going. I said, wow, this is just awesome. So I like the culture of the people and their lifestyle.
Lillian, what about you? What has been your most valuable experience, do you think?
For me, the most valuable experience has been visiting a company in Muscatine, Iowa, Stanley Consultants. One thing that stood out very much was how important adhering to business ethics is for success. That really translated to me. Because in our country, we struggle with lots of corruptions and mismanagement. So it was very important for me to learn from the horse's mouth how to do business without corruption and how to succeed.
In the United States, that's also, I mean, it's a big part of the rule of law in the United States. So working in a country with a lot of corruption, that must be much more challenging, because if no one else is adhering to business ethics, that must be hard for you.
Exactly. But there's always hope. There are always friends to rely on who buy into the same kind of, who subscribe into the same kind of values. And you keep finding each other and you draw strength from each other. And now I have even more strengths because I can reach out to people in Iowa to give me strength.
What do you want Iowans to know about Ethiopia?
I would like them to know that Ethiopia is no longer the starvation icon. Ethiopia is full of culture and beauty and coffee. Lots of coffee.
Lots of coffee. Delicious coffee. Peter, Malawi is one of the smallest countries in
yes.
Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that you've gotten some looks from Iowans thinking, I think I've heard of Malawi, just like people think, oh, maybe Iowa, maybe I've heard of that place. So what do you want people to know about Malawi?
Malawi, we're known as the warm heart of Africa. We are the second most peaceful country in Africa, second from Botswana. And we are the country full of opportunities. If the people of Iowa would like to go somewhere to invest, where they will be assured of security, where they will be assured of hardworking people, come to Malawi.
Dimi, let me ask you as we close out the hour, as you look at these fellows and you think about the 26 or 20, 21 other fellows that you've been spending time with this summer, what are you most proud of?
Their business acumen. The way that they see things with an open mind. The way that they analyze issues looking at the different facets. And also their commitment to bringing change, to doing things in a different way. They think Africa has the power to become stronger if this young generation accept to make the rules of the game.
The future looks bright to you.
Absolutely.
Dimi Dureska, thank you.
My pleasure, Charity.
Dimi Dureska is the director of the University of Iowa Institute for International Business. Luline Akacho, thank you.
Thank you.
Luline Akacho from Ethiopia. She's co-founder of an agribusiness company. And Peter Jacoby, thank you.
Thank you.
From Malawi, a managing director of an investment company and also the executive director of the Center for Free Market Enterprise. They are part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders, which is part of President Obama's Young African Leaders Initiative. There are 50 Mandela Washington Fellows in Iowa this summer. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.